Welcome back to another edition of the Late to Grid podcast. This is your host, Bill Snow, and I'm so glad you're here because I have a really exciting guest to have. He has some great things to talk about. If this is your first episode, welcome to the Atomic Autosports Studio. This is where we record all kinds of great stories of folks that have been on track in the past to share their stories and inspiration about how folks can get more involved in grassroots racing. And if you're a returning listener, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. And your involvement in helping us grow the podcast is awesome. But today I am joined by Devin Keeling, who is a time trial driver and a fast guy. We're going to get into that. But Devin, it's so great to have you on.
Good to be here, man. Thanks.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's just get started.
Good intro.
Yeah, thank you. Let's start by telling the listeners a little bit more about who you are, your background, your day job, and more about your motorsports background.
Yeah, sure. So I'm Devin. Most of the people in the Northeast Ohio region of the SCCA know me. That's where I'm primarily from and where I race most of the time. I'm 25, mechanical engineer. You run into a lot of engineers in this hobby, that's for sure. Mm. But I got into cars super young, but had no idea about the SCCA or NASA or any kind of amateur groups or anything like that. And then after my buddy took me to a track day in a car that I had just recently acquired, I caught the bug. And then from there, one car later, we are currently with the Mustang that I have right now.
What was that first car that got you on track?
It was a 98 Cobra, so still a Mustang. I've been Stockholm syndromed into that chassis. It kind of like you and Neons, you just kind of stick to what you know. And the Mustang is a horrible car from the factory to drive fast, but everybody does it and everybody wants to make them faster. So there's a ton of companies that turn like that turd of a chassis into something that's quite potent. And, you know, there's all those kind of spec, racers around that chassis. So that's what makes it a good platform for me, I think.
Yeah. And you just graduated, a year and a half ago, 2 years ago?
Yep. Did, the bachelor's program at the University of Akron. And then I interned at Soyjlok all through school and continued to work there.
Very cool. So. Very cool mm-hmm. indeed. So that first track day, when was it? How long ago?
I want to say it was my sophomore year of college, I think. So what is that? That's almost 4 years ago.
Yeah. So in 4 years, you've really accomplished a lot. We're going to get to that. I don't want to let the listeners know about that fast lap we're going to talk about. So, but there's a teaser that'll keep them around.
Yeah.
So you did that first track day. How did you explain the progression? Maybe someone's listening to this that just says, I don't understand after I do a track day, then how do I get more involved? So after that first track day in that Cobra, what did you end up doing after that?
So, my buddy Jack Sawyer, he works at Hawk Performance, and that's kind of how I got springboarded into those guys. Like, everybody thinks I work at Hawk when they first meet me. I don't work at Hawk. They're just really good friends, and those are the guys that I like hanging out with at the track. I would say they are, like, primarily my best friends in the paddock. So, we'll get into those guys, but I was just kind of just having a casual conversation with someone in class about my car that I just bought. And then Jack like pokes his head over my shoulder. He's like, hey, you got a car? What kind of car is it? Do you know what the SCCA is? And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? What are all these acronyms and what's an HPDE and what's the SCCA? And he was like, I got a track day coming up an HPDE weekend is what it was. At Shenandoah Circuit, in what state is that in? That's West Virginia, right?
I think it is.
I want to say that's where Summit Point mm-hmm. Motorsports Park is. But so that was my first experience on track. Just bone stock 98 Cobra with Nittos, because that's what every Mustang has to have. And they're like, and I thought they were good tires. And you learn a lot your first little track weekend, and you learn that they're not good tires. But did that weekend with an instructor and everything, and I found that I really liked the driving and the dynamics, and had a really good experience with that instructor, and then I just dove straight in after that. So my friend Jack, just after that HPDE, he had talked about, since the Hawk guys got him into track days, they told me about the Northeast Ohio region and how the time trials program work. So right after that track day, I started getting my car ready for time trials nationals, because that was just the time in the year that that it was. So my first track day was at Shenandoah Circuit, which is arguably a pretty tight, windy, technical track, like a lot of turns, a lot of not a lot of high speed areas, but a lot of heavy braking. You know, they got the carousel in that, so I was hitting the carousel my first track day. And then the second track I went to right after that was like 24, 25 turns and absolute mayhem. Like, I was fried after that 4-day week. But the car held through, and I drove the entire time. So that was like my first... Yeah, then it was actually over. Like, the time trials schedule was over after that. So I had all winter to kind of like stew and plan for what I was going to do with that Cobra. So that was kind of like my first foray into what even the SECA is, and how HPDEs work, and how time trials work. Because if I remember correctly, that HPDE weekend also had a time trials group as well. So I saw those guys like going out without instructors and getting the trophies at the end of the weekend and all that stuff. So I, and that was just kind of the natural progression. I think I've only done one other HPDE, actually. I've never done another one besides that first one. I just had that one instructor that really taught me how to like look ahead and where your hands go and how you shift and where. And he also had a Mustang. He had a newer one. So I jumped in his car, he jumped in my car, and we did that the whole weekend, and we worked really well off each other. And then the second HPDE that I was 2 years into the time trials at my second HPDE, and I just did it for fun and I was in advanced at that time. And the instructor actually told me to slow down at Nelson Ledges with my 98 Cobra. So that's always a story I like to tell, where I like, that was a time where I didn't have a good time with that instructor because I was like, well, we're not slowing down here, buddy. Like, that's not what we're doing. So maybe I overdrive, maybe I don't, but it seems to work out okay in the end.
Why do you think the instructor wanted you to slow down?
I'm not sure, because like, we weren't fighting through traffic. We weren't like coming up on a lot of people or anything like that. But I had set my car up at the time where it was very like, you know how you see people drive Civics when they're set up really well, where you just kind of lift off the gas and you can like, the whole thing just like pivots and you can steer it around. I had the car set up a lot like that, and as a rear wheel drive car, I find that still the fastest way to drive, like getting a lot of rotation and then transferring the weight back on the rear tires with the gas. And I can do that pretty well most of the time. Not all the time. I'm not that good. But I think that style can kind of deter someone trying to sit in the passenger seat.
Yeah, they might not be used to it or might not like that feeling.
Yeah, I think I was just like a little bit too slidey. I was in time trial mode because that's the only mode I have.
Yeah.
And it was during an HPDE. So I'm not saying it's the instructor's fault. I'm saying it's my fault. Mostly.
Yeah.
But after that, I've just done like ride alongs and I've never had like another instructor really. Unless it's like the guys from Hawk where we're going over like data and video.
Mm-hmm.
I get a lot more out of that and watching my video versus another person's video than I do with actually someone in the car, because really when you're in the car, especially in the one that I have now, you can't really take like inputs like that and make it meaningful like instantly, I think.
So that's a great point about data and video. So when you're watching that video, what are you looking for? How are you learning from that?
It's mostly car placement. And I will try and watch videos of very different cars too. So like in the Hawk paddock, we have Kubiak and Bickford, two very fast guys, usually top of their class, whatever they're competing in. And they're extremely, well, Bickford's car is extremely heavy and extremely high power. So he has sometimes a different line than what another person would take. And it's all about maximum like exit traction. So he maximizes that, where Kubiak is more along like my power to weight. Well, he's along more like my weight. I have a little bit more power, but the handling balance of our two cars are extremely similar when I watch him drive. So I compare and contrast the two, like where like a Corvette with no aero, stock motor possibly, like set up the right way. There's a lot of trail braking, there's a lot of rear end like rotation, whereas, and then I look at like a really heavy, really powerful car where it's a lot of straight line braking, a lot of like diamonds in the corners, you know, like straightening it out as much as possible. And then I like just kind of mixing and matching what I see different people do, and ultimately then just trying all that stuff. That's what I usually do during the practice sessions, and then I just look at my aim and see what the car likes more, pretty much.
So that is great advice, Devin. So listeners, if you are still in your, let's just call it the newbie period, and you're loving this on-track stuff, and you're going through the websites looking at all these go fast parts, stop. Invest in some video capture, whatever it might be. It might be a Smarty Cam, might be a GoPro, it could be a camera attached to a Catalyst, and start watching your video and others' videos, because that's going to get you faster than all of those bolt-on parts. Would you agree, Devin?
For sure.
Yeah.
I think the first thing that you spend money on should be, number one, the registration to go to the track. That should be the first thing that you do, and you should get out there and do it. That should be the number one thing that you do. After that, if you have the basic tools like the tire pressure gauge and the torque wrench and the jack and all that stuff, and if you don't have that, everyone around you has it. And that's the main thing too, where I'm talking to everybody in the paddock, looking to see their data, looking to see their video, and I'll just search the track on YouTube. I'll look up, you know, GT3 cars at VIR, I'll look up spec E36 at VIR, I don't care. And they're totally different. So, but the more input, the more information that you can capture, especially before you go for your first time, I think that's the most important.
Yeah, that's great advice. And one thing you hit on there is said another way, is seat time. Just get laps, just get your butt in the mm-hmm. seat and just make laps.
Yeah. A lot of things that I see most commonly with newbies is they have a car that's built getting into the track like environment, and that's fine, because I was the same way, because like I had just built street cars before I knew about the SCCA, and that was the car that I took. But if you're building something for the track without having the experience for the track, you're doing it backwards. Because mm-hmm. most of the stuff that you're buying it's going to come off in the long run, I would say.
Yeah, you know, and we learned that with the Neons. So as we were experimenting, you know, we went big sway bars and then we dialed it back. We even ran no sway bar for a race in the front once. You know,
yeah.
We're not involved in a cheap sport.
No.
You know, so for somebody getting into it, you know, yeah, don't go and buy all that stuff. Save your money for seat time.
No, because there's plenty of people in a clapped out Miata or Civic or Mustang or Camaro or whatever with no parts on it that have 200 treadwear tires and they're faster than quote unquote pro touring cars.
Yeah.
I have seen before. You know, you see things like that happen at like the Akron sports car clubs, autocrosses, and all kinds of stuff, and Motor State Challenge, all these beautiful cars built very well, close to 1,000 horsepower, beat by a Miata. Happens every day.
I love it. Miata's always the answer, right?
Yeah, it is.
Unless you have a Mustang.
The most fun I've had was ND Miata at NCM.
Yeah?
Somebody let me drive their ND Miata. And that was after I had my car with all the downforce and all the spring rate and like all that, so I literally just Baja'd like the curbs, and I don't think the tire like came off the ground, whereas my car, I actually have a picture that I sent you in that form where my car is about 2 feet off the ground in a what they call it, tabletop at NCM, because entirely too stiff to take that curb. But yeah, ND, I just like jumped it. It didn't matter. That was a good time.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about your season last year. You were running time trials. How did your season go last year?
It went very well. The best season that I've had so far. It keeps getting better, hopefully. But 2 years ago was when I got the current car that I have. We can talk about that later. But 2 years ago was me just like fixing something every single event where, because I had just bought the car, it was in pieces when I got it, just kind of threw it together and went to Gingerman that same week, I think, that I got it. So, you know, I was breaking power steering pumps and alternators, and I don't have the right rear gear in the car, and it's shifting weird, and that was like my first year with the car that I have currently. And year two last year was when I like shored everything up and got it balanced, got it handling, got it reliable, and so I could just pound on it. And so from that, from having the ridiculous car that I could now fully bring out, I won't even say fully, bring out maybe 70% of its true potential with driving it the way that I am now. We took the U1 championship in the SCCA Ohio PA time trial championship, which is the fastest overall class. So we don't keep track of like total time overall. It was a per class competition, but I'd want to say, considering I had the lap records at the two tracks that the competition was held at, I'd like to say I have the fastest car overall in that competition, as well as the ultimate one class, which is the fastest class in the time trial rulebook.
So you have the fastest lap at Nelson Ledges and pit race for U1.
Pit race is official.
Yeah.
They are not sure what the fastest time trial lap in competition is at Nelson Ledges. Just because I've talked to Aaron Kine, he's a good friend of everyone at Nelson. We all know him, Stupid Fast Tire. His TA2 Trans Am, why is it? I just said, it's a Camaro, not a Trans Am. Yeah. Trans Am is the name of the series that he used to compete in, but it's a TA2 car, and I know the fastest he's ever been around Nelson is a 105.5. So the fastest that I went around Nelson last year was 106.6. Mm-hmm. So that 105.5 is the fastest lap that I've ever heard of at Nelson. I know like an open wheel car can do like a sub 1 minute there.
Yeah.
I haven't delved deep into like the SCCA record book or anything, but I think I have the production car based lap record at Nelson Ledges.
That's awesome. So
I'm hunting for Aaron's time. I want it.
Yeah.
Eventually. If I had a tire sponsor and had some A7s, might be able to knock that down. But
oh, that's worth a couple seconds.
Yeah, money don't grow on trees, and I've ran takeoffs ever since I've had that car.
Yeah. Well, can you
from Aaron? So thank you, Aaron.
Yeah. What in U1? Can you, is that open tire or does that have to be 200 treadwear?
That is any tire you want.
Okay. So you're doing A7 takeoffs?
No, I'm doing the IMSA tire, the Pirelli DH.
Gotcha.
So Aaron gets a lot of those from like Porsche Club guys, and they're homologated size, so they all come the same size. So they're pretty readily available and a lot cheaper than buying A7s or a true Time Attack R compound. So it's entirely a constraint of just my budget to run those tires, but I like the tires that I run now because they are within a second or two of the top dog slick R compound. But I can drive the whole session. My car is not one of those like glass cannon Time Attack builds where it will break every 5 minutes. So I actually like staying out for the entire session. And my entire last lap is usually my fastest lap, just building that temperature up over time, which is the exact opposite of the like mentality that time trials is supposed to have. But that's just how it works with my car, how I drive it and how I have it set up currently. Because yes, I do like the ultimate lap time, but I do like driving it as much as I possibly can.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just a conflict of interest and I'm taking like the middle road pretty much.
What else do you have planned for this season? Or actually, I guess, I'm sorry, we're still talking about 2022. So that's awesome. Again, congratulations on those lap times. That is impressive. And to think about it, I mean, you're only 4 years into this, we talked about earlier. I mean, that's some awesome progression.
Yeah, it was a big skip, like from going from that 98 Cobra to the 96 GT that I have currently. But that was just, it literally just like fell into my lap. And it was everything that I was going to do to the 98. And I was like, here's what I already want at a third of the price. So, you know, why not sell my current car, recoup half the costs of my new one, and don't have to worry about building it or taking it to a cage builder or all the crazy things that go into building a race car, you know?
I'm always a fan of buying, not building.
Yeah, it was just like it was a perfect situation where it was in just enough pieces where I was sure that it was going to work when I got it working, but it, you know, it wasn't 100% there. It was like buying a house that needed paint and carpet. Mm-hmm. Like you save like tens of thousands of dollars if you buy a house that needs paint or carpet. But then just putting that in, it doesn't take nearly as long as building a house yourself. Pretty much.
Yeah.
That would also be my next piece of advice to anyone that gets into the HPD time trial crowd and really gets a bug for it. You don't have to mutilate your streetcar. If you want to keep it your streetcar, find somebody's broken down project and clear out your garage and get ready.
Good advice.
That would be my other bit of advice.
Any other 2022 headlights? Headlights? Highlights?
Car actually doesn't have headlights, so don't have any of those. No, the Ohio PA time trial competition that you guys covered in your last episode, I listened to that and it was a good one. What you talked about there, that was probably the highlight of last year's season. I did not participate in the Ultimate Track Car Challenge, just because it was a conflicting weekend with SCCA schedule. But now the SCCA schedule is in conjunction with Ultimate Track Car Challenge at the end of this year at NCM. So I'm going to do that again. I did that in 2021 at VIR, which was a lot of fun. But I did not get to do that for 2022, and now I get to come back for 2023. So I'm stoked for that.
Awesome. Let's talk a little bit more about 2023 then. What else do you have planned?
Right now, so we had that first event of the year. That wasn't a very great weekend. Saturday was okay, but it was like 38 degrees and sunny. I couldn't get temperature. Track was kind of slow. Everybody was kind of struggling out there. I'm glad it wasn't just me, but I think I was having a lot more trouble than the average person because the average person in the time trial space runs a 200 tread wear street tire, which is normally like a one or two lap and done kind of thing. And that's only related to tire temperature and how much abuse they can take before they overheat. I had the opposite problem where I could not get enough tire temperature. There was this big issue where like my first two laps would be like 220s at VIR, which is crawling for me. So I'd be gridded with all these people that were doing like 204s, 203s, but they were doing it lap one, and I would eventually get down to like 201, 202, but it took me like five laps to do. So there was a lot of managing traffic. There was a lot of laps that weren't great. There was a lot of short sessions. So just kind of the weather shot ourselves in the foot for that Saturday, and then it literally snowed and rained all day Sunday. So we packed up and left. I don't have reins. I don't run reins, and I will only go out in the rain if I absolutely need to. Another set of wheels are in the budget this year, hopefully. But another conversation that I wanted to have, and we can go on this tangent whenever, but speed is exponential to money. So when you start having a car like this, or you start going as fast as I'm going or people in that league, you're spending a lot of money to go that fast, right? It's a lot cheaper to run a Miata with a 205 tire and brake package than it is to run a full stop tech kit with a 3,000 pound Mustang with 500 horsepower and 315 tires. So we're just talking consumables and the type of parts that you're putting on the line when you're going that fast. So a set of tires for me is like $3,000. Wheels and tires, like, and takeoffs. So it's a big pill to swallow to put a set of tires on that I might not ever run for that year or the year after. And tires age out. So, and we all know this racing, like the consumables and the things that, you know, age out, that's what really nickels and dimes you to death. And it can kill your season if you let it, or you can just go out and run what you have. And that's what I choose to do.
Yeah. So, what tracks are you going to be running?
I feel like I'm not good at staying on topic. Am I meandering?
This is great. This is the beauty of it. It's all about your motorsports journey. What's on, you know, people are learning from this. I love it. So what tracks will you be running at in 2023?
So we'll be doing the Ohio PA time trial competition again. It's back and better than ever this year. So I am hoping to defend my title there. So that's Nelson Ledges and Pit Race and Dan spilled the beans on his little announcement, so I can say we were going to Mid-Ohio too. So that's another track that I love racing at, and I don't get nearly enough time to. So I'm excited to go back to Mid-Ohio. Usually I'll do it HPD at Mid-Ohio once a year just to drive it, because I have so much fun there. No instructor, though. I'll do an instructorless advanced session for HPD. I like taking passengers during HPDs, too. So that's another good reason I do those as well. Anyways, that's probably the three main places for the year. I know the time trial competition, it has multiple events at Nelson and Pitt, so I race there the most frequently. That's where I have the most seat time at. So I love going back to Nelson and Pitt multiple times a year, because I feel like I just progress that much more when I visit tracks that much more often. And then we already went to VIR. That put a bad taste in my mouth, so I want to go back again this year sometime. I don't care if it's competition or HPD or whatever. But have you ever had that? Like, you've had, like, a horrible experience at a track, and you want to go back and just, like, immediately wash it out of your brain that happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's what I want to do at VIR this year. Hopefully I'll get to do that. And then the time trial program, the national time trial program, goes up to Gingerman and down to NCM. And way late in the year, I believe Road Atlanta is on the schedule. But I've never been down there, and I don't know if I'll make it this year.
And
go ahead.
Yeah, you trailer the car, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. So a trip.
Yeah,
to
the car has no VIN, no blinkers, no headlights. You know, nothing.
Yeah.
So.
My goodness. Let's talk. So prior to VIR, you were posting updates of this Mustang without a roof, cutting off body parts and panels. I mean, you did a lot of work to this in the off season, didn't you?
Yeah. I got into weight savings this year. That was like my big thing, because every winter I kind of evaluate the car, and we all do this in the Midwest, you know, because we got 6 to 8 months where it's just absolute crap outside, and I've parked the car in the shop and I just kind of stare at it for a while. And I think, like, what was holding me back the most, in the car, and what can I do to fix that? So as well as myself, you got to take a look, like, at the driver. That's arguably the most important part of the car. So it's a good time for development. That's kind of why I like that our sport has a little bit of a break period, because you can take time to breathe, and all the duct tape that you put on the car to get through all the events, you know, you can peel all that back and actually start fixing the car. So I do like that break. And long story short, everything that I looked at that could make the car marginally faster. Again, this is our little speed versus money discussion. It was going to be like $20,000 to do like one thing that I wanted to make the car faster. So I was like, well, I could get off my wallet and cry for a long period of time, or I could just kind of get creative and find speed in ways that were a little bit cheaper. So I decided to take the winter to just kind of look at removing everything in the car that I didn't need. So there's a lot of steel still in the car, and just because it's an old, and we can get into the history of the car later, but it was actually built for American Iron Extreme in NASA. All that right. was the class that the car was built to in California before the car came over here. So it was in Baltimore when I bought it. But so started in California, built as an American Iron Extreme car, you know, did some Sonoma and all the tracks over there, and then came over to the East Coast and raced American Iron in NASA over here. And then I found it, and I didn't really want to jump right into wheel to wheel, considering this is my second year driving on track. So I was like, okay, I'll just continue this car in time trials, because time trials has a spot for any car that you want to bring. So That's kind of where the car came from. So the car still had glass. It still had it had a heavy fire suppression system. It had a full competition roll cage, which is a little more than you need for the time trial setup. It had a lot of steel panels in it. It still had like the rear seat section, so the rear seat could still go in it technically. But yeah, so I took the steel roof off, replaced all the glass with Lexan polycarbonate, speed hold every bit of steel that is covered by a panel, essentially. And just every little tab or bit of steel that wasn't giving any sort of rigidity at all to the car, I just lopped off, essentially. And then I was going to make a carbon fiber roof, but ran out of time, so I stuck the steel skin back on, and that's the current state that it's in now. But I have a lot of good guys that I know that do a lot of composite work, so the front body kit on it is all fiberglass now. The trunk is fiberglass now. I have molds for fiberglass rear quarters and roof, and like a carbon roof. All that stuff really adds up. So, and I'm a welder fabricator, so I just kind of went to town. I was in my wheelhouse, like just cutting and welding and stitching things back together and maintaining the structural rigidity of the car and just getting rid of everything that it didn't need. So, last year with me in it, the car was 3,300 pounds with a full tank of gas. The last time that I set it up with me in it, it with a half tank of gas, it's 3,000 pounds.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah, and then I lost about 20 pounds too, just trying to get work out and get in better shape to drive the car. So that's again something that I did in the winter time, because the car is a very physical, visceral experience to drive. And if you're doing like anywhere up to like 10 laps or something, it feels like you ran a marathon. And you know, physical endurance was actually becoming an issue last year, where I could have kept going, but I couldn't turn the wheel anymore, like that kind of thing. So trimmed weight off of car and driver, pretty much.
Well, congratulations on the weight savings, you personally.
Thanks.
not just the car. Yeah, that's awesome. I think health and nutrition and fitness, while a topic with the pros, you know, Tony Kanaan, you know, doing Ironman events, Jimmy Johnson, even Dale Earnhardt Jr. always going out for long road bike rides. At our level,
you know what all the F1 drivers look like, you know?
Yeah.
Look like they mountain bike 40 miles a day and eat salad.
Yeah. And at our level of motorsports, it tends to get overlooked. So I'm glad that you brought that up as something that's important for, you know, being your best in the car.
Yeah, especially for the endurance crowd. You know, time trials, like, I never realized I needed to improve my physical endurance for racing until I got the new car and started pushing it for the full 20-minute session. And the level of physicality that car takes compared to a street car is very different. Like with the large grippy tires, even if it still has power steering, it's still a big struggle to accurately place the car. If your arms start getting tired, your placement, I can tell I'm getting tired when my placement on the track starts getting a little sloppy. And just like I said before about how I drive the car kind of sliding, kind of like rotating, I can balance that very well. But if I start getting tired or out of breath or my legs start shaking, all those fine adjustments start losing those fine adjustments. So that was a couple things that I ran into last year, and it was something that I really didn't like, so tried to fix all that.
Sounds like you're on the right path.
Have you ran into that at all with the endurance racing? I see that you like go work out and are part of a gym and all that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, so the fitness definitely helps with mental clarity as well as, you know, the physical endurance to do things. And there, you know, there are times even in an HPDE event where, you know, I'm 15 minutes in and you could tell you're losing that. You're physically starting to have some difficulty, which then mentally you're having difficulty. You're missing turn in or breaking points. You're getting a little fatigue, and, you know, that becomes a safety issue for you and the other drivers. You know, the worst, I tell this story a little bit. The worst is in an endurance event where you're with a smaller team and you're the one that also has to thrash on the car when there's a problem. And if you miss your sleep, you know, like a 24-hour race, and that, you know, you're out there in the dark and you're seeing things, you're getting tired. That could be a bad situation. Yeah.
I've had times where, like, we worked all day to get the car ready and then we had to drive to the track still. So we get there at like 4 a.m. or something, and you got to unload the car and get ready, and then you maybe catch like an hour or two of sleep, and then you jump in the car to go for that morning qualifying, and it makes a huge difference in your capabilities, for sure.
Absolutely.
In the record attempt where I got the fastest lap at pit race, on the in lap I actually almost passed out. It was I think it was lap like 11 or something like that. That was the fastest lap that I did. And the aim was just green and green and green. So I just kept going. And my car has manual brakes. It was like 95 degrees that day. I probably didn't prehydrate as much as I needed to. But, you know, it was like I ran a marathon at the end. It was like the oxygen deprivation and everything was shaking and just, yeah, it was, I think I edited that part out of the video of my in lap, but you could see my head like floating a little bit as I'm like trying to pull into pit lane. But yeah, that was like cause that was towards the end of 2022. That was towards the end of that season. And I was like, shit, I have to, you know, start going to do the bike or start running or build up some kind of tolerance to that kind of output, essentially, because that was tough.
Well, there's another great piece of advice you just dropped, and that is paying attention to things and then making changes. So, you know, you are self-aware enough that, hey, something's going on here. I need to make this change, and that's exactly what you did in the off season. So don't ignore what your body's telling you, or your car for that matter. You know, if it's making noises, not handling like it did, that's a good reminder for the listeners to have it looked at. Go see a doctor, go see a mechanic, whatever.
Yeah, becoming a student of cause and effect as far as cars go, that's huge. And, you know, you don't have to be a full-blown suspension engineer to know what certain things are doing on your car. And a lot of that stuff you can drive around if you know how to, but you have to understand the mechanism of what's happening to get there first. Like, splitter broke off at VIR and I had a really bad vibration. I've seen and felt the similar vibration when like aero disturbs the car. And, you know, like the big topic of last year in F1 was porpoising, and you saw that vibration through the car. So I knew exactly that's exactly what was happening. So I just kind of drove through it. I probably shouldn't have, but I knew it wasn't going to kill me. Or there's other times where you can tell, like, hey, something's really wrong with the wheel, something's wrong with the tie rod. But just as long as you know what those systems are and you understand them, and there's books and a wealth of, I think I've watched every video about high performance driving on YouTube there is, just like trail braking and apexes and how tracks work and all that stuff, and how modifications work to your car. And that just goes with talking to people, knowing people that have Mustangs, people that have Neons, people that have Corvettes. You know, what do you do on these cars to set them upright, and all those kind of mechanical things that you pick up over time.
Well, and that's a great segue into one of the things I want to talk about, which is, what are your go-to resources? So earlier in the episode, you talked about data and video. You just talked about YouTube as well. What other resources? Are there people you follow on online, on social? Are there some YouTube channels or books that you highly recommend?
So coming to my mind right now, there's like a couple of YouTube channels that I watch a lot of, like Driver 61. That's mostly about like high performance driving. That's just about what to do to the to actually drive a car on track and stay at the threshold of traction, because that's as fast as you can go. Threshold of traction on all four tires is the fastest that you can drive the car. How to do that, that's an entirely different subject. So learning that and understanding that, and how to tune your car to optimize that, that's big. That's really what you're doing your entire practice session, is tuning your car to optimize that balance. Knowing what understeer is, knowing what oversteer is it doing it when you're on the brakes, in the middle of the corner, on the gas, and then you can put rake in the car, you can put wedge in the car, you can tune the shocks, the rebound, the compression, maybe, depending on what shocks you have. Do you know what shocks you have? All that kind of stuff. And that comes with really being a student of the car that you have, like the chassis that you have, as well as just in general knowledge too, because there's a lot of general recommendations that'll get you pretty far in the racing world. But if you're working on a production car, you have to be knowledgeable of that chassis. Another thing is, there's a really good group of guys on Facebook, 79 through 04 Mustang Specialized, some really fast Mustangs in that group. And they all know exactly, they know all the ins and outs of the Fox body and SN95 chassis, which is what I have. Every little repair, every little modification, every little thing that could possibly break on your stock car when you take it to the track, like, everything has been documented and laid out in front of you. So that would be my advice if you're starting from, like, a bone stock car. You got to find a group of people that race that car and do it well. And then they'll tell you the things that you absolutely have to do, you know, before you go to the track, if there's anything. And most of the time there's not. But, you know, like, most of the time they'll just tell you to put an AccuSump on so you don't blow your motor up if you have bad oiling, and then you just go. Other cars have good oiling, so you don't need an AccuSump. Sorry, Corvette guys. But you know who you are. Anyway. But yeah, YouTube, Facebook groups. I'm in contact with a lot of the people that design the parts that are on the car. So that would be Cortex Racing. They're Ohio-based. So a lot of the aftermarket suspension, if it's good, it is still around and it has customer support, and the guys there are, you know, suspension or chassis engineers, and they really know how to give you like a baseline setup for a car. So I know there's different companies for every single car. I couldn't tell you what they are for different cars, but I could list them off the top of my head for Mustangs. So again, just being a student of what you're doing, that's the most important. But and then getting a little bit more advanced, there's a certain tools that you could use at the track to fully optimize the car, like pyrometers and tire pressure gauges and data. I mean, data is the big thing. Just information and knowing what to do with it. The inputs and outputs, really.
Right. So one thing I like to learn from folks too, is what advice you would share. And we kind of hit on that. I want to make sure we didn't leave anything out. You talked about not mutilating your daily driver, to be your track car, register, get seat time, build up, you know, your collection of basic tools. But is there any other advice you would offer someone that either is just getting on track or they need to take their first step to get on track?
I would say all the associations are good, you know, NASA, SCCA, GridLife, they're all good places to be. So don't be afraid to cross-pollinate. And as well as you need to start somewhere. You're not going to be the top guy as soon as you show up, and it doesn't matter what you show up with either. You could show up with a $130,000 Porsche or a car that costs the same as one of their wheels. Like, it doesn't matter. So you need to just do it first. And then you need to see if this is really what you're going to dedicate all your time and all your money to, and if you're prepared to do that. And so for the first year, I would just drive whatever you had to wherever's closest to you, including autocrosses, because that's the cheapest way to get into this kind of driving. And then just do that for like a year without modifying anything, and seeing if this is really what you want to do, because it's a big commitment, and it's a bigger commitment for other people than it is different people. You know, there's a lot of people that don't put any time into it, and they just kind of change brake pads and brake fluid, and they just kind of go out and have fun. Or there's people that every waking moment is dedicated to, when they're not at work, they're dedicated to getting ready to the next thing. And that just depends who you are, really.
I have three more questions left. So, but before I ask my final two, is there anything we didn't talk about or hit on that you wanted to?
Not that I can think of.
Yeah. You know, and as I'm thinking about this,
I feel like you've like asked the question, and then it's just like it turns into a whole different spitball of whatever we end up at. I couldn't even tell you if I repeated something I said like 10 minutes ago that I said like 20 minutes ago. I'm kind of just going, man. So it's been... feel free to, like, this is the first time that, you know, that we've like talked for in a long form. Mm-hmm. And I was just wondering, if have you talked about yourself on the podcast yet? Like, what you're into about with the neon and the endurance racing and stuff?
I think in some of the other seasons, we're in season three now. I've hit on it, and I have an RX-7 that, fingers crossed, I just picked it up 2 weeks ago. Had it at the tuner. We had it on the dyno. I've got probably a full Saturday to get it ready, but the goal is to have that at Nelson Ledges on the 15th for Reed Kreider's event.
Oh yeah, that's another one that I was gonna say Kreider Racing is a really good resource. Yeah. Too. They're a little bit more hardcore, but they'll still help you out with whatever. But I've taken my card there just to get aligned and corner balance, like just when I was like down to the last day before I needed to load up, and I really didn't have time to corner balance it myself, because that's if you don't have a lift, it's a pretty crappy endeavor, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, those guys are really knowledgeable too.
Yeah. But I have I'll have to record an episode and go into some deeper things, but I've got the RX-7. I do have a Miata that I've tracked. It's got Olin's. And some other small bits, and that's been a blast. Throw a seat in it for a day and just...
Slow cars are fun too.
I know.
they're arguably more fun. Like I said, I had more fun driving that ND Miata at NCM than I had like driving my Mustang at Miata or Mustang at NCM. Like, yes, my car was 20 seconds faster, but I thought I was going to die the whole time. That's not like a particularly great feeling, despite despite the attitude that I put out in the world when I'm at the racetrack. Like, I really don't care. I don't like being that scared in the car most of the time. So yeah, slow cars are fun too.
They are. But one thing I want to do, and I got to hold myself to this, is probably after the Ohio PA time trial, after you guys have your second event, is probably get a few of you on, like you and Kubiak, maybe one other person, and hit on some of the other topics that that you brought up, you know, driving fast versus smooth, tires and temp, those sort of things. I think the listeners would really benefit from both you and Mike, and like I said, maybe somebody else, just how you're looking at that stuff and what to look for and how to do it. So we're going to, I'm going to make a note to get you guys on the schedule.
Yeah, you're you could do a whole episode on driving fast versus driving smooth, and it, I think your attendance list should be me, Kubiak, and Justin Peachy. that would be a good roster for having that conversation, because if you've ever watched any of our in-car videos, we're not, you know, doing slow hands and nice, you know, rolling off the brakes and onto the gas, and we're not doing that no. stuff anymore. This is an HPD one.
All right, I'm taking that note. I'm going to get something scheduled with you guys.
When I did my first HPDE, though, that's how I started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have that fundamental before you start bleeding the car over the knife edge of traction. It's not a good feeling when you're new. But you get there. That's why it takes years.
And that's why the seat time is important.
Just exactly.
Get a feel yeah. for that.
Yeah.
Well, so then two last questions. So actually, you could talk about your sponsors, and then how do people connect with you and follow you and learn more about Devin?
Okay, so on sponsors, my number one sponsor will always be Hawk Performance. Even if they stop giving me stuff, I'd plug them first because they're the best group of guys at the track, best group of guys to talk to, best group of guys to have around working on your car. And giving you advice on how to drive all the tracks in the Midwest, pretty much. So there's my shameless plug to them. Like I said, I do not work for Hawk. My friend that overheard me talking about cars and the whole reason that I got into racing is him. So that's the whole reason I even knew the SCCA existed. So I owe all that, all of this stress and all of this fun and all of this good stuff I owe to them. And, yeah, I talk to those guys every day about cars and what's going on and when I'll see them at the next race and everything like that. So that's my number one sponsor. Going down in no particular order, DEI helps me out a lot. They give me all the thermal components for the car, like heat shielding and reflective tape and all that kind of stuff. They make great products, and they're Ohio based, so I would pick up any of that stuff that they have. I go to Summit Racing. I should be sponsored by them, but I'm not. I sponsor them with how much I pay at that place, because it is quite a lot. Nine Lives has helped me out before, on wing elements and aero bits. AJ Hartman has helped me out with some carbon fiber stuff. Christopher Robbins at Gorilla Motorsports has helped me out with a couple custom parts. He's another big Mustang American Iron Extreme guy, chassis builder, roll cage builder, engineer, just all around good guy. AMSOIL, all the fluids in the car are AMSOIL. And that's really it.
That's great. We'll make sure to put links to all of those folks in the show notes so listeners can click on, learn a little bit more about the sponsors, and maybe even get products from them, and which supports you and other racers and our whole racing community. And then you've got YouTube, Instagram, and Facebook. So we'll put links in the show notes to all of that as well so folks can watch your videos and connect with you online.
Yeah, you can just search my name for the Facebook and the YouTube. You know, Facebook has YouTube links embedded in it and everything too. And then Instagram is just my name, or I think my handle is Basic Dev on there.
Where'd that come from?
Just nickname stuck around. It's always the flat affect face. So I'm just, you know, no emotion.
Yeah,
I look intimidating at the track, like I'm really mad at something all the time, but in reality, I'm just stressed and concentrating a lot, okay? So I will be friendly if you walk up to me, I promise. I'm just thinking about something really hard, okay? I get that a lot.
Do you really?
Yeah, RBF, big time.
Yeah. Well, the last...
Very hard on myself, too, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, you know, and that's that comes with someone that's got a competitive nature.
Yes.
And always wants to be better.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter if it's racing or whatever. I've just kind of found my group of people, and this is where I like to be, and this is the hobby that I've chosen. So that's where the competitive side gets to come out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, it's now time for the last question, and Devin, got to be truthful here. Have you ever been late to grid?
Oh, which time?
Ah.
For sure. I've missed calls before I've been late to grid, but the only one that's good enough for a story is, again, the first time that I had this unlimited one car. Because of all the safety that went into it, I was like, oh, 10-minute call. I got time. And then they called 5 minutes, and I was like, oh, I guess I should go up there. And I start slipping the suit on, and I was like, oh, crap, I got to put the shoes on, too. And I was like, oh, I got to put the gloves on. And then I had the Hans device, and it was my first time trying to put belts on with the Hans device. And it was like I never got in a car before. And then I, like, strapped myself down, and then I couldn't reach the gloves that I had to take off to cinch the belts down. So then I had to redo all of it. But yeah, I was like 10 minutes late for my first ever experience with my race car, just because I didn't know how safety equipment worked. And all, because before, when I had the street car, I was just jump in, put the seatbelt on, and I got a helmet and I'm good. But then like the whole system with the suit and the gloves and all the fire retardant stuff. Yeah, I've been late.
Oh my goodness. I think everyone, and not everyone, most drivers can relate to not being able to reach the gloves.
I feel like it's a universal problem.
Yeah, for sure.
I want to make like a bracelet with like a lanyard to it or something. It'd be like, where you could just like an elastic band that you yank really hard and it just pulls your gloves to you.
Well,
I
don't know if you had these when you were little, but you know, there used to be little elastic things that would stick on your coat, your winter coat, that would hold your gloves or mittens when you were a little kid.
I think I've had like Velcro, like of that kind of thing, but yeah.
Could have been like that, yeah. Well, Devin, it was great having you on the episode. What you shared is perfect for those that are experienced as well as those that are new. Lots of great takeaways for the listeners. So thanks for sharing your motorsports journey on the Late to Grid podcast.
Yeah, hopefully I didn't rant too much, and I had a good time talking about it. So I hope to come back again.
Well, I want to thank our listeners for listening and for being a fan of the show. If you have an opportunity, please give us a 5-star review on wherever you're listening to this podcast. Tell a friend. You know, that's the whole way Devin got involved in this, is a classmate overheard a conversation and invited him to attend an event. So if you have some friends that you think want to get in motorsports, invite them to listen to the show. Invite them to a track day or HPDE event, or even just to hang out with you at a race. Want to give a quick shout out to 3 sponsors: Atomic Auto Sports, ETC Coaching, and LMS EFI. If you get an opportunity, you want to follow me, I'm at on Instagram at _BillSnow. You'll find the Late to Grid podcast on Facebook and Instagram. Just search Late to Grid, and do me a favor, don't be late to grid.